Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday evening. Of course, most of us, if not all of us, were here this morning, but it's nice to be back together again. I'm here for two things right in a row. We'll do the seven steps teaching first. And when we do the seven steps teaching, we're going to start with number 625. So I'll get that link in a little bit. I haven't grabbed it yet. And then after an hour of seven steps teaching, there's going to be an Awakening Together member meeting because it is the first Sunday of the month. So I'll be here with you for 2 hours. And I do like to start with music, you know, just to kind of settle in a little bit. Usually I've been doing something right up until the time that I come here. Today, what I've been doing is contemplating and meditating Sufism, Sufi poetry, the names of Allah, the names of God, listening to Sufi music pretty much all day, except for when we were in the meeting. So, and then in the last 45 minutes or so, I moved into a more of a business mode. I entered in the donations that came in over the weekend so that during the member meeting I could give you an update on how many dollars have been donated to the retreat campaign. And then I planned the member meeting agenda a little bit, so I had a little bit of direction. So the last 45 minutes or so has been more business-like. But it's really been a nice day, spending the entire day in contemplation and meditation with Sufism. I think those of you who know me know that devotion, I can go very, very, very deep into devotion. And that happened today, so it was quite nice. In fact, I sit here still in my pajamas. I never even took the time to get dressed today. I haven't gone anywhere or done anything else, so it's been sweet. And still I'm ready for a transition. So I'm going to play a song. This song is a bluegrass song that's been a favorite of mine since I was about 20 years old, which is about 24 years ago. No, 34 years ago. 34 years ago. It's a song by a lady named Clara Lynch, and it's called Your Presence is My Favorite Gift, which really fits considering the state of devotion I've been in all day today. So here we go.
Your friend is my favorite.
As I was listening to that song, I realized that while I was in Sufi devotion mode all day long, probably most of the country was involved in getting ready for the Super Bowl, right? And that's why I noticed we have fewer people here tonight than usual, and I just realized that's why, because there's a lot of people that are interested in the Super Bowl. As you can imagine, considering where my mind was today, I didn't think about the Super Bowl once. It was really a gorgeous day. So we're going to begin then with the seven steps to awakening. And as I mentioned, we're going to begin with quote 625. And let me post a link into the room. This is from my journal. Oh, I see. It's also been hard to get in the room today. Yeah, I remember this morning during church, right towards the end, the sound was not so great. So we'll see what happens, I guess, tonight. Yeah, we'll just see what happens. What else can we do? All right, I've just given you a link to the Seven Steps Journal, number 625. And what I'm going to do before I go to the journal is read the quote that I was contemplating when I wrote that journal entry. And the quote is in the Seven Steps to Awakening. At the very bottom of page 107, it's a quote from Nisargadatta Maharaj, and this is the quote. With the dissolution of the personal I, personal suffering disappears. Seems like I remember writing something this morning. Probably before I started on Sufism this morning, I did spend an hour with Nisargadatta Maharaj. I've been contemplating one conversation from I Am That, conversation number 66, for several days in a row now. In fact, today was the 10th day. And actually, more than 10 days, because I had been with the conversation a couple days on my own at least before I started sharing it. So really more like 12 days. I start every day with conversation number 66 in I Am That, which is Nisargadatta Maharaj. And this morning I think I've posted my 10th excerpt from that conversation along with, you know, my thoughts regarding that excerpt. And I think that's probably where the writing that is coming into my mind now, I think that's probably where that got written, was when I was doing that contemplation early this morning. But what I remember writing about was that belief that the personal mind is who I am is torturous. I might have used that word, torturous. Suffering is a more common word. You know, sometimes when people think of suffering, they think of suffering as physical suffering, like, you know, like I broke my wrist, which you guys may remember I did about a year ago. I broke my wrist and I'm in a lot of pain, and that's suffering. That's what some people think of as suffering. Other people think of it as just really emotional upheaval, like my lover left me, my dog died, everybody's talking bad about me. I'm the laughing stock. You know, we think of those types of things as suffering. But I think there's a certain amount of refinement that happens before we realize that the personal mind itself, identification with the personal mind itself, is suffering. If I get identified with the personal mind, which does happen from time to time, my personal mind chatters a lot. But what it feels like is that the chatter just comes and goes and comes and goes and comes and goes, and there's no grabbing onto it, no identification with it. So, you know, although maybe if I was to be perfectly honest, I'd prefer there was no chatter at all. The chatter doesn't create a great deal of suffering because I just see it as meaningless. And it just comes and goes and comes and goes. And, you know, it's just a little extra noise that isn't necessary. Of course, it wasn't there today in that deep, deep devotion. There wasn't any chatter in that. That's one reason why today was so lovely. But if an idea comes that still appears to have some value for me. For example, if I'm concerned about how people perceive me as a leader, the leader of Awakening Together, you know, and I want to be perceived a certain way, and then some kind of a thought comes that is indicating that maybe there's a problem with that desire, with that goal, then I might give it my attention. And once I give it my attention, I can get sucked in, and a whole story can develop. It can be a series of stories. Stress can begin to happen. Fear can begin to happen. Trying to control, manipulate, figure out, all of that can begin to happen. That is suffering. That is torturous. And in fact, even talking about it, even just allowing myself to talk about that for a moment, I could feel it. The way that I feel it when that begins to happen is I feel it in the front of my head, like right behind my forehead. I've never done any brain studies, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's where a lot of that activity is. Some of you may know. Because I swear that if I allow myself to become engaged, I can really feel it in the front of my head. If the thoughts are just coming and going and coming and going, there's a relaxed sense. Again, the chatter still, this chatter, probably when I become even more subtle, the chatter itself may seem torturous. Right now, the chatter, as long as I'm not applying any meaning to it, does not seem torturous. But once I become engaged, that's real suffering. And you know, that wasn't always, or at least that didn't always seem to be true for me. You know, if we go back 11 or 12 years, when I was really fully in the business world, boy, I can even feel that too. I was much harder then than I am now. I'm very soft now compared to them. I was very harder then. And thinking is what I prided myself in. I was very good at looking at a problem from multiple points of view, considering a lot of different possibilities and coming up with a solution. So that forward mind thinking happened a lot. And I didn't consider it suffering. And in fact, I considered myself a happy person. It kind of reminds me, if you've ever seen the movie Peaceful Warrior, right towards the end of the movie, when Dan Millman has already, you know, had some awakening experiences and is more relaxed, in a more relaxed being in the now state of being, he's talking to a friend of his, and he's talking to a friend of his about happiness. And the friend is like, well, I got to have this and this and this, and then I can be happy. You know, he had to win an Olympic gold medal and make his dad happy and all these other things, and then he could be happy. You know, and he didn't even notice that he was listing happiness as things or achievements. And that's kind of the way I was, only I already had a lot of things and a lot of achievements. You know, I had the job that I had set my sights on 9 years or so before. I lived in the community that I had dreamed of living in for many years before. My daughter went to a school. She had to win a lottery to get into that school because it was such a good school. You know, I had all of these things. And so what I did was I looked at these things or circumstances in my life, and I declared myself to be happy. And I didn't notice the stress, the unworthiness, the fear, the controllingness about me. I didn't even notice all of that. So I was suffering without noticing I was suffering. And that's kind of what I remember writing this morning when I was contemplating conversation number 66, is that it's really amazing. You know, attachment to the personal mind is torturous, and yet we cannot even notice the torture. That's amazing. But somehow what happens when we start embarking on this spiritual path, when our heart, in whatever way it does, draws us into this spiritual path, and we begin to listen, and we begin to practice in the way the heart asks us to practice, and we begin letting go of different core beliefs and attachments and things like that, we start to really experience a true peace, a relaxed peace, a peace, you know, the way it's worded in the Bible is the peace that passeth understanding, you know, where things can, you know, quote, go wrong in the mind's point of view. It's not the way the mind would call it, a dream life. You know, things are going wrong, things are breaking, running out of money, friends are unfriending us, you know, and yet we're still happy. We're still at peace. We're in acceptance of everything. We allow the flow. And when we get to where we experience that, and we can get to where we can experience that more and more and more, then when for some reason, because of something that has not yet been healed or disbelieved in the mind, when something then catches our attention and we get sucked back into the mind, we notice immediately that being attached to the mind is torturous. You know, it's the contrast of having real peace, real happiness, contrasted with getting caught up in the mind again. That's when we notice that the mind is torturous. So as long as I have the ability to still be identified with mind, I have the ability to suffer, and I will suffer to the degree that I am attached to mind, to the degree that I give mind meaning, that I say those thoughts have meaning, or I give mind value. I say those thoughts are valuable to me. So again, the quote we're looking at from Nisargadatta, number 625, is, with the dissolution of the personal I, personal suffering disappears. And that just makes sense. If the cause of suffering is being identified with the personal mind, then being completely disidentified, completely disengaged with the personal mind, there would be no suffering. Suffering would disappear. I'm kind of reminded of a line in Revelation, even though I can't quite quote it, it's something about how the tears are wiped from every eye, right? That's what happens when we let go of our identification and our attachment to the personal mind. So again, the quote, number 625, with the dissolution of the personal I, personal suffering disappears. Let's go have a look at the journal. I see Lynn's been posting the link in the room, so everybody should have it if you want to join me. Here's what the journal says. Suffering can only appear when the idea of I or self is engaged. Fully disengaged from the self-centered I, suffering is impossible. And of course, that's just a nice little summary of everything that I just, you know, said. You can see that that I saw this, you know, in October 2012 when the journal was written. I saw this. And so what I saw by this point, by October 30th, 2012, a lot of letting go of meaning, a lot of letting go of false beliefs had already occurred. But I knew that I was not done. And so when I would write statements like this, suffering can only appear when the idea of I or self is engaged, fully disengaged from the self-centered I, suffering is impossible. You know, statements like that kind of put a fire in my heart and lead me to want to just continue to notice whenever attachment does happen, not deny it, not try and justify it, but notice and then look at it with ease and realization. And allow that attachment to be healed or broken. In fact, I'm remembering this morning when I made my post regarding I Am That conversation number 66, I said something about don't believe thoughts that tell you it's not worth it to go through this process of disengaging from the mind. And don't believe thoughts that tell you you're done. There's no reason to even think I'm done. That thought has no purpose that I'm aware of. Either I am in peace now because I am not engaged with the mind, or I'm suffering because I am. I don't need to have a thought, I'm done. I don't need to evaluate it and make that kind of decision. If I'm in peace now because I'm not engaged with the mind, that's wonderful. I just rest in that peace. And if something should happen to come along that interrupts that peace because I become engaged with the mind again, then I look at it. And that's all I need to know. I don't need to have any ideas about done or not done or how close to done I am. I just have to know how I feel right now. And I just need to look right now if unhappiness, suffering, attachment is occurring right now. I never need to declare done. If I happen to fall into a peace and I never ever come out of it, I'm never ever engaged with the mind again, that's beautiful. I still don't have to declare done, right? There's just no need for it. So if a thought comes along that says, I am done, you know, I have disengaged from the mind, don't believe it. Let that thought go. If you believe that thought, you're engaged with the mind in that moment that you're believing that thought. So again, number 625 in the journal, suffering can only appear when the idea of I or self is engaged. Fully disengaged from the self-centered I, suffering is impossible. And with that said, we can scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 626. And I'm going to read 626 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. This is, again, a quote from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. It is only your mind that prevents self-knowledge. Have you guys ever had thoughts that it was something else? I mean, I know I have. You know, like some of you may know that I have this boyfriend that I've been with now for a long time, since I was 30 and I'm 54, so 24 years. And he is not at all interested in the spiritual path at all. I mean, I don't think you can be any more disinterested. And if I happen to, I very seldom even mention anything to him, but if I happen to say something like, you know, oh, do you want to come to church with me today? Like last week, I was the minister here at a church locally. And so he could have gone with me. If I happen to say something, oh, you want to go to church with me today? He just makes this face like, oh, it's the most distasteful idea in the world. And what is important to him, what he perceives as his salvation, is, well, two things, I would say. Money. And he is, you know, works very, very hard and is very successful and is making a lot of money. And the other thing that is his salvation in his mind is play. He wants to really play. And so we spend every weekend playing. And the reason I was in contemplation all day, devotion all day, is because he's out of town this weekend. So I was able to just be in devotion all day. But he likes to really play. And so every weekend, you know, we have these plans and we're always, always playing. And sometimes my ego arises and says, if it wasn't for him, I could be self-realized. Right? He's the obstacle. For example, you know, if it wasn't for him, I could spend every weekend just in devotion like I did today, right? It's all his fault. That's not true. And I know that's not true, which is why no action has ever been taken to, quote, get rid of him. He's still here. I know that every time that thought comes up, that thought is coming from ego. I can feel it. So I disregard it. But you know, it says that. It does say that. If it wasn't for him. One thought that I've never had, but I know a lot of people have, is if it wasn't for this place where I live. You know, people have the thought, if it wasn't for where I live, you know, there aren't like-minded people here. If I just lived in a community of like-minded people, then I could awaken. You know, my community, that's the problem. Some people have the thought, my health is the problem. If I was just healthier, you know, there are other things I know. But what Nisargadatta is saying is that is not true. Whatever you are saying, that this is your obstacle, That is not true. Your only obstacle is your attachment to your own mind. It's the only obstacle. You know, and what I find is whether I am with my boyfriend on our very fast-paced schedule of playing, or whether I have an incredible, peaceful day like I did today, just being deep in devotion, I find that either way, I have the same opportunity to not be attached to mind. If you read Ramana Maharshi, you know, Ramana Maharshi in some places will refer to when people go off into the woods or go off into the cave, you know, they leave their family life and their work life because they perceive it's an obstacle to awakening. And they go off into the woods or off into the cave. He says their mind goes with them. You know, you can sit there in the cave and your mind be just as engaged. You can be just as engaged with mind in a cave. And you can also disengage from mind in family life, in work life, in what we would call normal everyday. It's not a matter of where you are. It's a matter of your desire to disengage. You know, it's a matter of, I would say, first wisdom. First, there is, you know, there is a time when you don't know that disengaging from mind is the real goal or purpose. There's a time when you don't know that. So first, maybe you need the wisdom to see that. But then once the wisdom has arisen where you see that the mind itself is the obstacle, then the willingness, the desire, the persistence, the commitment, the earnestness, the devotion. These are all words that can mean the same thing. That's all that's needed. And if you have that, then every place and every situation is an opportunity to let go of believing the mind, to let go of being engaged with the mind. So Nisargadatta says, it is only your mind that prevents self-knowledge. Only your mind. Not where you live, not who your partner is, not what your health is, right? Not what your job is. It's only your mind. And one thing that's nice about Nisargadatta is Nisargadatta was a working man and family man. You know, Ramana Maharshi wasn't. Ramana Maharshi was one that went and sat in a cave for 17 years or so. But Nisargadatta worked. He had a cigarette stand, right? He sold cigarettes. He had a wife, and as far as I know, he probably had children. I haven't seen mention of them, but I'm imagining that they were probably there. Maybe not. Maybe it was just him and his wife. But he had a family. He had a job. And yet he focused on, as he words it, the I am presence to the exclusion of everything else, which means he let go of being attached to mind. And he says, and he awakened in 3 years. Right? With a job and a family. He did not run away. So let's look at number 626 in the journal. It says, the mind is the only obstacle to self-realization. Thought is the only obstacle to self-realization. Being engaged in thought is the only habit that needs to be broken. I like to keep it simple. Right? I like to keep it simple. If I know that's the only thing I need to do, I can do that anywhere. If I'm taking a shower and I notice I'm getting lost in thought, I can bring myself back. You know, if I'm working and I start noticing my mind is judging this work as burdensome, I can bring myself back. If I'm talking to someone and they're, you know, telling me, you know, how awful I am and blah, 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 and I start, you know, start listening to that and thinking around that, I can bring myself back. It just doesn't matter what's going on. I can always disengage from mind. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. It doesn't matter what is going on. I can always. Do you hear me? Always disengage from mind. One problem, one solution. Hallelujah. Again, number 626 in the journal says, the mind is the only obstacle to self-realization. Thought is the only obstacle to self-realization. Being engaged in thought is the only habit that needs to be broken. And if anyone is listening to this and saying, how the heck can I break that habit? I would recommend looking at the teachings of Inner Ramana. And that is a book that came through me. I'm not marketing the book because I want book sales. I'm marketing the book because it came to me to be helpful to me in breaking that habit. And I think that the tools that are offered in that book are very simple. They're easy to use under any set of life circumstances, and they will help us break that habit. So the Teachings of Inner Ramana, you can find it on Amazon.com. Or you can go to reginadonacres.com and look under books and find it there. The mind is the only obstacle to self-realization. Thought is the only obstacle to self-realization. Being engaged in thought is the only habit that needs to be broken. So let's scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 627. Barb says it's nice to also have the Teachings of Inner Ramana on CD. And I think probably on Amazon you can probably order it with or without the CD. If you do happen to order it from me, you're going to get it with the CD because all of the copies that I have here in my closet are packaged, the book and the CD together. So. All right. Number 627, first I'm going to read the quote by Nisargadatta Maharaj. Rebel against your slavery to your mind. See your bonds as self-created and break the chains of attachment and revulsion. Well, ago when I was talking, Dove says CD is great. He's a listener. I'm a reader. I prefer to read. He prefers to listen. I think that's why we offer both options because, you know, that's just the way people are. Some prefer to listen, some prefer to read. I don't think I have ever even listened to the CD myself. But I've read the book many, many times. In fact, I have a CD in my closet that's not attached to a book. It's just a CD. And the reason is because I gave my book away. My Inner Ramana book I gave away in October to someone who wanted it. And I didn't have any with me, so I just gave them mine. And so when I came home, I needed another one. And so I opened a package, and I took out the book, and I threw the CD back in the closet because I don't need it. So there is a CD in there that someday somebody will want the CD, and I'll say, oh, here, I have an extra one, and I'll be able to give it to them. But back to number 627. Let's read this again. Rebel against your slavery to your mind. See your bonds as self-created and break the chains of attachment and revulsion. So a while ago when I was talking about how we can watch and watch our mind and notice if we're becoming attached, and then we can disengage from that attachment no matter where we are. And I gave some examples. I said if I start to see this work as burdensome. I don't know if you guys can hear that. Here's a pile of stuff, you know, work stuff to get to. If I start to see that work as burdensome, that's revulsion, usually called aversion, but here Nisargadatta is calling it revulsion. That's attachment to mind. If I am not attached to mind, I have no aversion to this work. I do not see it at all as burdensome. It may sit there until, you know, the inner prompting time comes, so the time comes to do this type of work. This is all kind of a detail-oriented stuff that I have to read and file and isn't particularly urgent, you know. So it may sit here until I feel that prompt to go ahead and dig into this pile and start moving through it. But the judgment that it's burdensome, the feeling of aversion or repulsion, the wishing that I didn't have to do it, that doesn't happen unless I'm attached to mind. I've had a lot of people tell me if they had my job, you know, because I'm the president minister of Awakening Together, so they see my job as spiritual. And they say, if they had my job, but if you had my job, it would very quickly just be another job for you. You would see how much just day-to-day work there is here that would, you know, goes along with any job. This job is not much different at all than the job I had when I worked at private healthcare systems in Waltham, Massachusetts. There I was the director of corporate learning services. And, you know, that was all about adult training, developing courses for adults, scheduling courses, getting people to register, managing the budget, you know, just all that kind of stuff. Guess what? I do all that kind of stuff here every day. So in that way, nothing has changed. The work is the same. If I had the same mind, there would be parts of this job that I love. For instance, I've always loved the development, and I still love the development of the courses. But there would be parts of this job that I would hate, like this pile right here, you know, and the budgeting and the managing of the finances, the accounting and the complaints, you know, when the people aren't happy, you know. But if I have attractions and aversions like that, that just means that I'm attached to mind. That's what Jesus called in the Bible, building your house on shifting sands. So it doesn't matter what job you're in. If you look at your job and you say, I like these parts of it, but I don't like this part of it, or I hate all of it. Some people say they hate all of it. Know that that's just attachment to mind. Please don't believe it's true. Your true self doesn't have aversions. Your true self wouldn't say, I don't like the paperwork and the filing and the budgeting and the accounting and the complaints. That's the mind saying that. And if you feel it's true for you, you're believing the mind. So what that's saying to you is, I need to break this attachment to mind. That's a wonderful clue. I need to break this attachment to mind. And again, how do you break the attachment to mind? Well, as I mentioned, the teachings of Inner Ramana has some great tools, but also if you study Ramana Maharshi, Ramana Maharshi's self-inquiry is a great tool for breaking the attachment to mind. Nisargadatta says, rebel against your slavery to your mind. A couple weeks ago, I said the same thing. I worded it differently. I said, do not tolerate being in your wrong mind. Just don't tolerate it. You know, not in a judgment way. You know, words like do not tolerate and rebel kind of sound negative and forceful. And I know I didn't mean it negative and forceful. And I know Nisargadatta doesn't mean it negative and forceful. But at the same time, at some point, we just have to make that decision. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not going to tolerate myself in that wrong mind. Kind of take a stand, you could say, outside of mind. We take a stand to not be sucked in and engaged. And of course, even after we make that decision, we're probably going to get sucked in and engaged. But then we take action when it happens. Whatever action that we are using to help break that attachment. So, for example, if the action is a mantra like I am that I am, and I'm in the shower, and my mind starts wandering into some story, some he said, she said, and I'm going to say story. And then I notice it. I take a breath. I rest my mind. And I start focusing on the mantra. And I allow the mantra to bring me back to awareness, watching awareness. I disengage from the mind. You see, that's taking a stand. Most of us, maybe none of us, can say, I'm not going to be engaged with the mind anymore, starting right now, because it's going to happen. But when we take the stand, what we do is every time we've noticed it happens, we take some kind of action to disengage then. If you disengage every time you notice that you're engaged, that habit of being engaged is going to become broken. That's what Nisargadatta means when he says, rebel against your slavery to the mind. Do not tolerate it. Every time you notice that you have been sucked into the mind again, take some type of action to free yourself. Every time. Every time. And do it again and again and again. Rebel against your slavery to your mind. See your bonds as self-created and break the chains of attachment and revulsion. All right, let's have a peek at the journal. I said the other day, I said, do not tolerate yourself in the wrong mind. This first sentence is very much like that. The first sentence in the journal says, do not permit mental distraction. When attention drifts towards mind, use awareness, heart, and thought to disengage and return attention to non-thought awareness being. So again, what do I mean when I say use awareness, heart, and thought? How do you use thought to disengage from thought? Well, the mantra is one example. Self-inquiry, you know, who is it that's thinking these thoughts, or who is it that has interest in these thoughts, or who is it that sees these thoughts, right? These are all thoughts. You guys have probably heard, I think both Nisargadatta Maharaj and Ramana Maharshi have used this example. I believe I've seen it as I studied both of them. They use the example of the thorn to remove the thorn. You know, if you have a thorn in your foot. Well, my mom didn't actually use a thorn. She used a little needle, but that's the same thing. She would get a needle, right? And she would dig around the thorn until she could reach in with the tweezers and pull the thorn out, right? So you need a thorn to remove a thorn. Well, the thought to remove the thoughts. The thought to remove the attachment to thought. There are certain thoughts that come, that are given, that are gifted, that are used to help break the attachment to thought. It also says use the heart. The heart would be the wanting to break the attachment to mind. I have known people that make a mistake. And the mistake is believing they're bad if they don't break the attachment to mind. And so when they see themselves attached to mind, there's this thought, you know, this kind of scared thought, like, oh, shit, I'm bad again. I'm bad again. And then there's this forcefulness out of fear to try and break the attachment to thought. It's trying to escape being bad again. That whole energy is not helpful. This needs to come from the heart. I need to have gotten in touch with the place in me where I want to be free of mind. It's a love, it's a devotion, it's a true desire. the intense desire for liberation, right? The wanting. And I've listened to teacher after teacher after teacher say that one of the most important things to cultivate is that desire for awakening. You see, that's the heart. Inner Ramana talks about it, the devotion, the love. He says you need devotion and discipline. This is what Inner Ramana says, devotion and discipline. Discipline is consistency. Discipline is what I said a moment ago, every time, right? Every time you notice that you've gotten sucked into mind again, you take some kind of an action to disengage. Every time, that's the discipline, the commitment, the consistency. But he says you also need devotion. That's the heart. That's, I'm doing this because I want to. I'm not doing it to avoid being bad. That would be aversion. That would still be attachment to mind. I'm doing this because I want to. I want to be free. I want to realize my true self. Right? I want to love. It also says use awareness. Awareness is much harder to describe. Because awareness is so subtle. But awareness has intelligence in it. Awareness has intelligence in it. And that intelligence, that wisdom, is also a part of the formula that allows us to break the attachment to mind. This is what A Course in Miracles would call the Holy Spirit. You know, it would not recommend that you use the ego to let go of the ego. It would recommend that you use the Holy Spirit to shine light on it so that it is let go. That's the awareness. So you want to allow the awareness, the heart, and thought. Again, thoughts, the thorn to remove the thorn. Use all of these to help you disengage from the mind. So number 627 says, do not permit mental distraction. Do not permit it. Do not tolerate it. Rebel against it. Do not permit mental distraction. When attention drifts towards mind, use awareness, heart, and thought to disengage and return attention to non-thought awareness, being. All right, we have time for one more, so let's scroll down and click on 628A. And this is actually the last Nisargadatta quote for step three. After this, we're going to move into the Supreme Yoga. So here's the last Nisargadatta quote for step three in the seven steps to awakening. To be what you are, you must go beyond the mind into your own being. It is immaterial what is the mind that you leave behind, provided you leave it behind for good. This, again, is not possible without self-realization. So, you know, in the world of humans and human thought, there are good minds and there are bad minds. You know, a good mind has whatever we call good judgment. It's intelligent. It's probably honest. It's probably charitable. It's probably committed to its work. It's, you know, did I say loving yet? It's loving. You know, this would be a good mind. And you know what? There are people. There are minds like that. There are these minds. My dad has that kind of mind. My dad is a good man. And, you know, if you're going to describe my dad using the judgment of the world, I don't see how you could pick a different judgment. He's a good man, right? I always say he's like Andy Taylor. That's my dad. Imagine Andy Taylor, you know my dad. But then there are the Hannibal Lecters of the world, you know, the, oh my God, you know, the crazy, you know, serial killer, oh, the ISIS of the world, you know, chopping off the heads, you know, the kill everybody, kill all disbelievers. Sorry, I know you all don't think that's a laughing matter, but that's a bad mind, right? We have the good mind, Andy Taylor. We have the bad mind, Hannibal Lecter, you know, ISIS, the British guy with the accent and the black mask, you know. That's Nisargadatta say? He says, it's immaterial what is the mind you leave behind. The good mind is not better than the bad mind. They're both still attachment to mind. And you know what? Even the good mind suffers. My dad suffers. Oh, not like some people. Again, if you look at the human scale of judgment, my dad suffers less. He's generally happy in the world. But if you look closely, you're going to find the things that he's worried about. You're going to find the topics that he's stuck on. You're going to find the few judgments that he does make, and he makes them over and over and over again. You're going to see, if you know how to look, if you know how to look, you're going to look at this man, one of the happiest men, humans, on the planet. And you're going to see the suffering. And you're going to realize the suffering is there because the belief is, I am this mind. I am this mind. I am this man. I am Don Akers. So even the good mind is torturous. So it doesn't matter if I have the bad mind by human standards or the good mind by human standards. They both need to be left behind. To be what you are, you must go beyond the mind into your own being. It is immaterial what is the mind that you leave behind, provided you leave it behind for good. This, again, is not possible without self-realization. And, of course, what that means is, you know, my dad, really thinking fully, I am Don Akers, he's most likely, I mean, we don't know anything for sure, but most likely going to die with the idea, I am Don Akers. He's not going to even attempt to leave that mind. Why? Because I am Don Akers. Seems true to him. In order to begin the practice of releasing the attachment to the mind, there has to be some realization this is not what I am. Some realization this is the false self, the imposter, the ego. And then a desire to know myself truly. So some degree of self-realization needs to occur in order for us to want to disengage from mind. If I believe fully that I am this person, I'll just keep right on being this person. To be what you are, you must go beyond the mind into your own being. It is immaterial what is the mind that you leave behind, provided you leave it behind for good. This, again, is not possible without self-realization. So let's have a peek at the journal. We have 628A. To transcend the world, one must transcend the mind. To transcend the mind, one must lose interest in it. To lose interest in mind, one must see all mind stories as distractions from my best interest. If any idea of mind is seen to represent my best interest, mind will maintain interest and the world will not be transcended. So again, if I care how people perceive me as the president minister of Awakening Together, if I want to be seen in a certain way, then when the mind pops up with stories about how people are perceiving me and what I need to do to change that perception, I am going to be engaged because I have interest in that topic. I have to lose interest in how I am perceived. And I only know one way to do that. And that is to be interested in only one thing. We're right now, we're right back to true desire again. We're right back to wanting to know thyself. By wanting to know truth, wanting to know myself truly, and only wanting that, then I have no interest in any other want. All other wants fade compared to my true desire. If I hold up the idea I want people to perceive me a certain way, and I hold up the idea I want to awaken, I want to know myself, I want to transcend the personal I, that second desire is so much more stronger and has so much more heart in it that the idea about being concerned about how others see me, it just melts away. So I lose interest in mind by knowing what I truly want. That's the heart again. I bring the heart to it. I'm going to scroll down and click on 628B. 628B says, consistent self-inquiry and self-awareness helps one transcend mind. Loss of self-awareness results in the I am the body idea. With this idea engaged, interest and attention will float towards mind and be held in mind until self-awareness is reawakened. So again, if I have the idea I am this body, which to me means more than the body, I'm the personality, right? I am Regina. If I have this idea I am Regina, then I have a lot of concerns. I have to worry about what other people think of me. Do you perceive me as responsible? Do you perceive me as loving? Do you perceive me as fair? Do you perceive me as spiritual? Right? I have to be concerned about, you know, am I fat? Am I thin? Yeah, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of other stuff I have to be concerned about. How much money do I have? How's my daughter doing? Because you know what? She reflects on me. If she's not successful, I look bad. You know, is my daughter being smart, studying, staying out of trouble? You know, I have to look at all of these things. There's so much to think about if I am the body. So what I want to use is self-inquiry, as taught by Ramana Maharshi or the teachings of Inner Ramana. I want to use self-inquiry to look and to bring myself back to awareness, self-awareness, capital S, self-awareness, knowing who I am, the changeless, the unaffected. And I want to stay with that awareness, aware of awareness. So if the mind says, ah, oh, you've got this pile of work here. You know, if Phil's my boss. I don't know if you guys know I have a boss, but I do, Phil. If Phil finds out about this pile of work that I haven't gotten to, he's going to think I'm irresponsible. Oh, my gosh. And then all the stress starts worrying about this pile of work. What I need to do is, what is it that's engaged with thinking about this pile of work right now? What is it? It's the mind. What am I? Would be my next question. What am I? What is it that sees the mind but is not the mind? What am I? And through asking these questions, I return myself to awareness. And then I rest in awareness. I be aware of awareness. I've just disengaged from mind. All right. Thirst just hit. That's what happens sometimes when you talk for an hour. Thirst hits. And it's the top of the hour, so what I'm going to do is play another song and drink. And then I will come back and join you for the member meeting. So let me pull up iTunes here. I'm going to see if I can find... Here's a song by Francesca Battistelli. It's called Strangely Dim. In this song, she's talking about how when she thinks of God, everything else goes strangely dim. That's the same as when I remember my true desire, all other desires fade, right? Because I want this so much. And then I can let go of being engaged in mind, and I can return myself to awareness, watching awareness. So here's Francesca Battistelli, Strangely Dim.
I've got all these plans piled up sky high, a thousand dreams on hold, and I don't know. Just can't see past the things I pray today. But when I think my heart is on all that you are, then every doubt I feel deep in my heart grows strangely dim. All my worries fade and fall to the ground. Sometimes where I